Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. This is my very favorite podcast of the year, where we go over the top 10 films of the year. And as always, my beautiful, beautiful co-hosts, Aaron Alvarado in Los Angeles, and Skylar Teo in Dallas, Texas.
Hey, David. Hey, Skylar. Yes.
Hey, David.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
So good.
Doing good. Doing real good.
2017 was a terrific year in cinema. They, for the first time ever, in 2017, they made movies that took place in each of the three towns that we live in, which is exciting.
It's never going to happen again, by the way.
Never again. Skylar got A Ghost Story. Mm-hmm. I got Lady Bird and
Shout
The
out
Work.
David Lowry.
What's that?
Shout out to David Lowry.
Oh, thanks, David.
Our boy, thank David.
You. Friend of the pod.
My favorite guest of the year, David Lowry.
Easily the best. I still can't believe we had David Lowry on this pod. And when I say we, I mean Skylar had David Lowry.
Yeah.
Nice work setting that up, by the way.
I'm just grateful for the friendship it created for me, having that happen. So
can we get him back in, like, for maybe at least 15 minutes?
We could probably do a sit-down this year.
Okay.
So that will probably happen.
I would appreciate that.
They just locked the old man and the gun or whatever it's called.
I was going to ask about that. When is the release date?
I don't know if it has a release date yet, but it is locked. It's edited. In fact, his wife just locked her movie, too. Yeah.
Is she a filmmaker, too?
She's also a filmmaker. She has a movie premiering at Sundance this year.
I know she's in that one scene in A Ghost Story, which I didn't realize watching it the first time.
Which scene is that?
The party scene where the guy gives the monologue.
Oh,
She's sitting at the table, right?
It's the best scene in the movie.
I actually love that scene.
That's funny, because some people hate that scene.
They do. It's a divisive scene.
That's the best scene in the movie.
They think that people think it's too heavy-handed and over the top, but I actually think that's part of the point.
I think it works in that moment.
I agree.
That's very early Richard Linklater.
So, it does feel that way, doesn't it? Yeah, it totally does. Well, let's get into it. We have 10 films to go through. We'll also afterwards talk what our 11 through 20s are, you know, so you know where some of the films fall that you feel like we omitted if they you know, are later on or later further down in our lists is what I'm trying to say. And also, we have our own award that we give out on the Brave Little Podcast called the Donal Award, the namesake of Donal Gleason, who in 2015 did a remarkable thing by having four supporting roles in major movies that were well-reviewed, which was Star Wars, Brooklyn, Ex Machina, and The Revenant. And each
incredible year,
it really, that what a run, man. Like,
just, I'm blown away by that every time I think about
it. It's incredible. It's incredible. And so he was the winner of the very first Donal Award. And then last year we gave it to Ben Foster, who we loved in Hell or High Water, which he didn't win the Oscar for, which seems insane. But you know, I think someone deserving won. Who won?
Supporting actor. It was Mahershala? Was that Mahershala?
Oh, what?
Did Mahershala win?
I don't remember.
I thought it was...
Was it Stallone, really?
No, he didn't get the Oscar.
No, it wasn't Stallone. Was it the old guy?
It was the guy.
Was it Bridge of Spies?
Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. That British actor.
From Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Well, no, Bridge of Spies was 2015. That's the year before.
Who knows? In fact,
edit
don't
this
Google
part
it.
Out. This is terrible.
Don't look it up.
There's no way to find out.
There's no, exactly. If there was a record, we would know, but there's not. Anyway, so this year's Donal Award. We have several nominees. We're going to go through that about halfway through our lists. After we do our 10 through 6 films on our list, we'll take a little break by talking about the Donal and the new inventive way we've come up with this year of selecting it, the winner. And then we'll go our top 5 films. We may need to break this up into 2 separate pods, depending on how long we go. But hopefully we can kind of really just run right through this. But before we start with the number 10, let's have a conversation right now about our criteria. I want to know what you guys considered this year to be in terms of the year in film. Is there a theme in your list that you noticed after you came up with these movies? How hard was it to come up with it? and how rock solid is your list? Is this locked in, or do you feel like your 11 through 20s are just as solid?
For me, it's been a good year in film, but I would say that my top 10 is a little bit fluxing, because I'd say my top 13, maybe top 14 movies are all good enough to be top 10. And so it's hard saying who's going to be 11 through 14 when they could all be in that top 10. So it's tough. I have an algorithm for deciding where movies are going to end up. That includes how many funny gay friends there are in the movie. That's a perk. If they have a catty friend who's there, that's 10 points for them. So anyways, you add up all those numbers, and then it gives you a number anywhere between 500 and 642,000. And that number, you put that back into another equation, and it gives you a letter grade. From a G to a Z backwards. And so that grade gives me the final score. It's plus minus. There's a little bit of fluctuating.
We don't do advanced metrics on this pod. We do it old school style.
You have to find out the BABIP of all the movies. And at that point, I've come up with my list, and so I feel pretty good about it.
Well, good. Good.
Yeah. I, too, have an algorithm for determining my top movies. It's basically, is Ryan Gosling in the movie? If so, then it's the number one movie on my list. So, I mean, that's just... Ooh. I don't want to spoil anything, but wow. I'll just say that.
Whoa. How many movies was Ryan Gosling in 2017? Just one?
Yeah.
It took him 3 hours to film it. It's a long movie.
It kind of felt like two movies. Two excellent movies. We'll see if that comes up later on our lists. Now, Skylar, we went over our films from last year. I actually went through and I didn't write down what our picks were. I literally just fast forwarded through the pod and wrote it all down. It was kind of a laborious process, but I really wanted to know how I would feel about just a year ago, my top 10. I feel like it's probably too recent for it to feel right or for it to ever feel wrong. I think if we looked at our list from 2 years ago or 3 years ago, that's enough time for us to see if we still feel that way. But you had mentioned, looking at your list, that you liked last year's slate of movies more than this year.
Talk about me?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I just look at my top five, and I don't know if I'd have La La Land at six. I'd probably move up Hell or High Water and The Nice Guys and Eye in the Sky. Anyway, but my top five, Hunt for the Wilder People, which is, I think, in my top five movies of all time.
Oh, whoa.
Swiss Army Man, which is an incredible film that I've watched like 10 times this year. I listen to the soundtrack on a weekly basis. It's an incredibly great movie. Yeah. Pete's Dragon, which David Lowery doing a mainstream movie and killing it.
Still hasn't found the audience really it deserves, but yeah.
It will. This will become one of those Disney... This is like something people will show their kids and their kids will love and be obsessed with.
You know what's
Moana.
A remarkable thing,
last
though?
Last year was great.
This is a remarkable thing. Honestly, 1 year removed, how poorly has both La La Land and Moonlight aged in that 1 year?
Terribly.
I mean, I got to be honest. Also, I like La La Land more now. I've seen it like three times on HBO. Yeah.
Oh, have you?
What?
Yeah.
How do you have time to watch La La Land? Because
you were lukewarm on La La Land, weren't
you? I was. I like it a lot more now. Ryan Gosling. That's the thing. It was the year of Gosling. Even
for me, I haven't viewed it. I haven't viewed it at all. So a lot of it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. I certainly was very high on it. I think I had it at number five on my list, if I'm pulling it up.
You had a five. Yeah.
And I didn't put Moonlight anywhere on my list. Thank goodness. None of us did.
Me neither.
Maybe we're just guys who don't like Moonlight, and that's why we feel like it hasn't aged well.
I mean, I liked it when I saw it.
Yeah. It was a fine film. I definitely didn't dislike the film, but I was confused by the amount of praise it received for the third act it had.
I wasn't confused by the praise. I understood the praise, and I just disagreed. Yeah.
Aaron, do you still have Nice Guys ahead of La La Land for you?
Man, that's a good question. Probably, I've watched La La Land more than I've watched rewatched.
You didn't even rank it last year.
Yeah, I didn't.
Is Manchester still number one, though?
Still number one? Still number one for me, I would say. And number two now, upon further review, is the movie End of Tour, which I didn't see until after we made the list. So number two is, I mean, easily my second favorite film of the year is End of Tour. I love that movie. So
see, I had
you saw the alternate ending, right?
No, I didn't. I missed the
alternate ending. The one where Jesse Eisenberg kills himself for real on camera.
But his character doesn't die in the movie, just so you know.
I liked End of Tour. I'd seen it before my list, but I don't think I connected with it like you did. Though it's Jason Segel's finest performance to date by a mile.
Since the Muppet movie.
Oh, get out of here. The Muppets was amazing.
Yeah, it's good. No, it's Muppets is good. It's better. Fewer Muppets
he's
in
good.
This film.
He's good in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, though.
I've never seen it.
That's a three-hour comedy that works, as far as I'm concerned.
Three-hour comedy?
Well, it's more three like 220, hours? But yeah.
I feel like he has a lot of those. The five-year engagement felt like 5 years. But that's it was, I think that movie's over
that's
2 hours.
That's not a comedy,
long.
Though.
Five-year engagement? That's yeah, that not like what the trailers told me. What?
By the way, Forgetting Sarah Marshall is under 2 hours.
It feels like 2.5.
It's 158.
even for a comedy, 158 is super long.
No, it's way it too long. Super it's long 30 hours. Minutes too long.
Yeah.
Every movie is 30 minutes too long.
Yeah.
All right.
Not Blade Runner 2, 2049.
Not according to Ridley Scott, who recently came out and said it was way too long. All right, I'm ready to get into this. I think we can talk about themes on our list as we go through the movie, so we can talk about that theme and how a given movie on our list plays into that. But let's kick this off with Aaron, and then go to Skylar, and then me, and we'll go round and round. So, Aaron, what was the 10th best film you saw in 2017?
I love 2017 as movie year, so I would say the overall theme for me was just entertainment value. So this was one of the movies. This is the only action movie in my list of top 10, and it was the most entertaining action movie I saw the entire year. That was War for the Planet of the Apes.
Ooh, good.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was the perfect ending to the trilogy. I think it's a trilogy, right? I thought.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Unless you can't count the Charlton Heston films.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was the perfect ending. It's probably my favorite of the new trilogy, and it's the movie that it's the Apes movie that I thought about the most after seeing, and I just really loved everything about this one.
Great.
It had a lot of depth, and for an action movie, I thought it had some heart and character. So, War for the Planet of the Apes is number 10.
Which monkey did Johnny play?
What's that?
Which monkey did Johnny play?
Johnny who?
You said it had a lot of depth, so I'm assuming.
I can hardly hear Skylar, by the way.
That's muffled. I'll very pump muffled.
It up. It's real muffled.
It's killing your punchlines.
Yeah, I know. That one would have been great too.
Oh yeah.
What could have been?
Would have killed. Is that any better?
There you go. That's much
better. Yeah, it's like
better,
way
actually.
Better. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So
great.
Give me War for the Planet of
did
Apes.
Did you awesome. Skylar, did you see War for the Planet of the Apes?
I didn't get to see that one this year. Mm. It's one of the movies that I have on my list of movies to see.
Well, what did you see? What is your number 10?
My number 10 might be a little controversial with you guys because it wasn't super well reviewed. Some people had really high expectations for it and it fell flat for them. But I loved it. It's my favorite DC movie that's come out in a long time.
Uh-oh.
And I know what you guys are thinking. Yeah. It's... I don't know. Some people didn't like the Batman portrayal in this, but I thought it was great. Some people didn't like the... whatever you have to say about it.
How was the CGI in it?
Lego Batman was incredible.
Oh!
I love it. It's not as good as the Lego movie, but it's my favorite Batman movie in a long time. Right up there with all the Christian Bale Batman movies. And I really enjoyed that movie. I've rewatched it recently, and it holds up, so... Give me Lego Batman at 10.
Even though about halfway through the film it falls apart, like that third act is just a mess.
The third act has some issues, but I think it wraps up well.
The beginning is so great.
The first hour is really good. The last 10 minutes is good. There's about 20 minutes there where it's weak, but everything else really works for me. It could be higher if that third act was better.
Lego Wow, so you were not kidding when you said you did not see a lot of films in 2017. Okay. So
well, can we ask? We know that you're a homer for Will Arnett, right? So
absolutely.
How did that play? And how did that factor into this?
He's my favorite Batman ever.
Okay.
So,
wow.
Yeah, that's the main part of this.
That's incredible. Okay.
Is there anything that he's done that you don't like? Is my question. Besides the last season,
cheat on his wife,
divorcing Amy Poehler. Yeah.
Very good. Okay.
Thank you.
My number 10 film is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. This is the Martin McDonagh film. That is a really wild trip. I think I told the anecdote did we review this film, right?
You mentioned it.
I may have mentioned it. I don't think we did an episode on it. No. We should. It deserves it. But I saw this film, and I was sitting next to this very kind elderly gentleman who, at a moment in the film that gets particularly intense and unexpected, and this is a film full of unexpected scenes and turns, the man turns to me and says, "Oh boy, golly, this sure is intense, but it's good." And he really hung on the good, you know? And I just thought it was so funny that he was giving me his review, but it was totally true. It was intense, but so good. I wouldn't say I'm a Martin McDonagh head by any means. Like I wouldn't say like I loved, I think it was Seven Psychopaths and some of his other work. And he did In Bruges, I believe, as well. This film, though, of the films of his that I have seen, easily my favorite. Sam Rockwell, Frances McDormand especially. I mean, the cast top to bottom is something spectacular, but more than just the cast and the performances, it's a film that it's controversial for some reasons, but it's a film about compassion. That's what Sam Rockwell said tonight when he accepted his Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor in this film. But for me, it was a film about redemption and what it means to achieve redemption and why. What's the purpose of redemption? Almost all the major players in this film are tackling this concept of redemption in one way or another, and all of them have very different paths that lead to whether or not they receive that quote-unquote redemption. It's a film that was very controversial because Sam Rockwell's character is a terrible person and terribly racist, and some people had complained that he didn't deserve to be redeemed. Well, I would argue that he's a character that actually wasn't redeemed. But it is uncomfortable in some ways. In some ways, the film is also hilarious. Frances McDormand is a tour de force in the film. It's an offbeat film, but totally worth checking out. So that's my number 10, Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. Now, the thing about my number 10 is that I actually had a tie. So there's two films on my number 10. And I'm kidding. There's actually not. I did that last year, and you guys
You sure did. I remember that.
Eviscerated me for that.
That was the worst.
And truthfully, I did it the year before as well, and I was committed this year to playing by the rules. So that's my number 10. So
I appreciate that.
Personally. All right. Number 9, Aaron.
Number 9. Okay. So for me, number 9, I talked about the entertainment value of movies this year, but there's also there's more to entertainment than just, you know, action sequences and witty dialogue. So number 9 is a movie that goes against, it's in stark contrast to my number 10. It's a movie called Columbus, which is a tiny little movie that came out starring John Cho and Haley Lou Richardson and Parker Posey. It is it's a very, very small independent film. The story is of a Korean-born man finds himself stuck in Columbus, Indiana, where his architect father's in a coma. The man meets a younger woman who wants to stay in Columbus with her mother, a recovering drug addict, instead of pursuing her own dreams, which is to be an architect. So they have this kind of, it's kind of like a lost in translation relationship where, you know, older man, younger woman, and they have like this instant chemistry, instant connection, and it's really like a deep kind of bonding thing over this. They're both connected to his father, basically. She admired him for his architectural prowess, and you know, and John Cho plays the son of the man that's in the coma. And what I really just admired about this movie is, first of all, it's beautiful. It's the most beautiful movie I saw the entire year. It's shot incredibly well. You know, they talk about this thing where every scene is a photo, basically. Every frame of a movie is a photo. That's how you describe this movie. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely stunning. But what I really appreciated is just the way that they explored this complicated relationship between these two people that were perfect strangers, that were kind of brought together by this unexpected event. And so I love movies like that. I find them like incredibly entertaining. So Columbus is a movie that I loved a lot. It has a ton of heart, some really good, interesting conversations and just development of relationships, and explore some uncomfortable moments, basically, So yeah, check it out. It's available on iTunes. So go.
Well, I'm glad you explained the kind of the background of what it's about, because honestly, I avoided the film. I was under the impression it was a Columbus biopic, like Christopher Columbus. And he's done some
things. No, I would have trashed that for sure.
He's done some things that were pretty terrible, and I was just like...
Bad year for Columbus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad year for... that's great.
Well, wow. I thought it was the Chris Columbus director biopic. You know, Home Alone fame. Ooh. Yeah, director that's why I originally watched it.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone director.
He did Chamber of Secrets, too.
He did do the first two, yeah. Put respect on his name. Yeah, it's amazing. Chamber of Secrets, which is the worst of those Harry Potter films, amazingly.
He also did Baby's Day Out, if you guys ever saw that.
Great movie.
Who hasn't seen Baby's Day
Out? Yeah, that's exactly. Awesome. That's Chris Columbus, baby.
Yeah, no, he's really good.
I've seen the trailer king. For this. I believe you shared it in the group chat. I enjoyed the trailer.
It's really, really good.
Nerd, so I think I'd probably really like it.
It's small. It's a small, very small story. It's beautifully shot. Beautifully
I'm surprised directed. It made your 10.
Yeah.
How
it's very impactful.
How old is John Cho's character?
So in the movie, they never say his age, but he's clearly in his late 30s, early 40s. Mm. John Cho in real life is 46 years old.
Insane.
And the girl that he's kind of developing this relationship with, she's 19 or 20. So, yeah, very young.
Yikes.
That's problematic.
Yeah. But legal.
Call me by your name.
Yeah.
All right. Skyler, what's your 9?
My 9. Going into a movie that stars my favorite movie star of all time.
Scarlett Johansson, wow.
Kind of a hero of mine. Yep, Atomic Blonde was just, no. I'm going with American Assassin, no, American Made. It was almost wow. American Assassin. That
Tom American Cruise Made. Making an appearance on a list.
Every year.
I get Tom Cruise in here.
American Made, number 9.
Yeah, this was a return to making quality movies again by Tom Cruise.
Yes, it was. Because
his last couple were just disasters. And so it was so good to see him playing a character that was kind of outside of what we've gotten used to seeing him in the last couple of movies, or his last couple choices. And so this was a departure. He's doing an accent.
You didn't love his character in The Mummy?
I didn't
where he played 26-year-old Tom Cruise?
Oh, The Mummy's so bad. I hate that. I wanted to like it too. I watched it. I was like, I'm gonna like this.
There's only one good bad movie that came out in 2017 that we'll talk about later.
It was not The Mummy. The Mummy's hard to watch.
It's actually really bad.
It sucks. And then after the Jack Reacher movie last year too, like,
yeah, it's rough.
I was very happy to see American Made, and it's a cool story. It's
fun movie.
Something that happened in my neck of the woods, and it's Tom Cruise's love letter to Arkansas.
Oh,
it's just a really beautiful
movie. I thought you were going to say it was Tom Cruise's love letter, just like cocaine smuggling. And
man, it's just, I love the scenes that happen down in Colombia.
They're great.
It's so great. It's love American Made. Like, I feel like it was just underpraised by the whole movie world. So
yeah.
Everybody should go see American Made if you haven't seen it.
Did it do well in the box office? Did it make money? I don't remember.
No. It did not do well.
Did not do well. Yeah, it probably wasn't cheap to make. So it doesn't look like it.
There was also a death in the production.
Oh, that's right. Someone died in the production. I forgot.
But it wasn't like screen or anything. It was just somebody who was driving people, flying people around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I don't count that. It wasn't like a stuntman or anything. Like,
no, it wasn't a Twilight Zone decapitation.
Well, no. Isn't it for the second Deadshot? Not Deadshot. What's his name?
Deadpool.
There was a death for the Deadpool sequel.
It's not going to stop them, though. Yeah. They didn't even delay production, though. They were back at it the next day.
Yeah, so American Made $51 million on a $50 million production budget.
Not good.
But they did $83 million overseas, so $134 million total. So they probably just broke into the green.
Maybe. How did they do in Colombia? Do we know?
They made $16 million in Colombia.
Wow.
Biggest movie ever there.
Incredible.
Very good.
No, that would be amazing, though.
All right, so... My 9 is actually the only documentary on my list. It's also a film that Aaron and I talked about in our very last episode, so I won't talk about it a ton here. Just listen to that episode to get the full rundown. But it is called The Work, which is available on iTunes for 99 cents to rent. It is a documentary about a therapy program in Folsom Prison that where for 4 days they invite a group of civilians to come and do these therapy sessions with inmates, where the inmates actually are helping the civilians through these therapy sessions, as well as these civilians are also helping some of the inmates. It's an incredibly interesting watch. Again, listen to the episode where Aaron and I kind of break it down. We have a lot more detail there. This is just one of those documentaries that has just stuck with me ever since I saw it. It's just a lot of the scenes, a lot of the things that kind of play out on screen are things that I've never been exposed to, I've never really seen before, and it's really affecting. But in our review of it, Aaron said it best. He talked about how the film gave you hope, you know, this idea, like hope in the human beings and humanity, especially kind of during this political climate. But it's just a fascinating, I was going to say fun watch. Maybe in some ways it's fun, but it's really more kind of shocking and breathtaking in all the right ways. So that's a documentary called The Work. Please check it out. And that's my number 9. And on to our 8.
My number 8 is a little genre movie by the name of It Comes at Night.
Yeah!
Starring huge friend of the pod, Joel Edgerton.
Joel Edgerton!
We love the guy. We are champions of one Joel Edgerton.
Oh, yes.
And bright fame. He is amazing in this movie. He's really, really good.
Hey, don't talk about my number 1 yet.
But yeah, It Comes at Night. If you didn't know, it was sold as a horror film, but it's not. It's not.
But
a horror
film. Is it the bleakest film of the year?
Oh, I think so. It has probably
so.
The most.
I think so.
The most downer ending for sure. Yeah. But it's dark. It's a thriller, and it's kind of like the edge of the seat type of suspense thriller, old school type of style where there's not a lot of jump scares. It's actually the complete opposite of that. It's all tension. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I've heard nothing but bad reviews from people that I've talked to about this, but I don't care. I think it's a great movie. And Joel Edgerton was amazing in it. And the people that played his family were great in it too. So I highly recommend It Comes at Night to anyone that likes, you know, horror movies or thrillers. So,
all right. It Comes at Night.
Yeah.
Skylar.
My number 8 is a list that I'm, or a movie that I'm sure is going to be on David's list. I'm not sure it's going to be on Aaron's list, but we'll see. It's a little movie called Baby Driver.
Baby Driver.
This is a movie that came out very early in the year. And when it came out, I was blown away. And I think time is kind of, I don't know if I love it as much as I did when I first saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you see the video of Egert Alberbecki, or whatever his name is, Ansel Elgert.
Ansel?
Doing his donuts in the parking lot that's covered in snow in his red Subaru. And you're just like, dude, he is Baby Driver.
He is
Baby
Driver.
Baby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been higher up. But we have to, of course, deduct 5 points for having He Who Must Not Be Named in the movie for a significant amount of time.
No, but listen, good news on that front, though. I don't know if you have... I went out and got a Blu-ray copy of it, and there is an alternate cut where we have Christopher Plummer in that role instead of Kevin Spacey. And it's a much better version. I hear he's going to get nominated for an Oscar for the DVD version
of Baby Driver. Christopher Plummer would kill it in Baby Driver.
That's it. So this is the thing. Just sorry. I know this is your time, Skylar, but I need to make one quick point.
Go for it.
I cannot overstate how incredible Christopher Plummer is in All the Money in the World, which is a movie that was actually pretty good. It's not on my list. It's not, you know, but I definitely enjoyed the film. He gives such a dynamite performance in that film that is better than anyone else in the film by a mile. And it's insane to think that he literally filmed 3 weeks before release to replace a different, you know, previously heralded actor, an Academy Award winner. And the fact that he showed up to do it was in the movie. I thought he was just going to be in a couple scenes that they were going to reshoot. No, he's in the film in a substantial amount, and he is incredible. Then I got to thinking about Baby Driver being like, I wish I could have the Christopher Plummer version. And then it dawned on me, every Kevin Spacey movie is better if it's Christopher Plummer instead. Like, that's got to kill Kevin Spacey's ego.
Did you guys ever see Swimming with Sharks?
No.
Oh, okay. Christopher Plummer would not be better in that one. Kevin Spacey's perfect for that role. He's perfect for that role. So,
American Beauty.
Yeah, I think he's kind of creepy, slimy somehow. Like, I'm trying to think of American Beauty. I'm not sure Christopher Plummer could have pulled off.
I am.
I'm sure. Yeah.
But to that point, I haven't seen All the Money in the World.
Yeah.
But who did they get to digitally replace Mark Wahlberg?
The same people that digitally replaced the mustache in Justice League. That's who they got.
Is Donnie Wahlberg? Wait, but like,
no, what actor? Oh, it's Donnie Wahlberg. Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Because I'm sure they had to replace him too, because he's really problematic as well.
Is he?
But to your point though, like Baby Driver's not on my list because of Kevin Spacey. I rewatched it again, and it makes me feel bad. I got to be honest, it makes me feel bad seeing Kevin Spacey on the screen.
Really?
How about the fact that Kevin Spacey is interacting with a young, young man?
We don't. Okay, it makes you feel bad because
facial hair.
Giving him money too.
Ansel has stories, probably.
Yeah.
That's why he's still driving that red.
I think it would bother me more if he were like the main character in of this film. Like if he was a substantial. I mean, he is definitely in the movie, but he's in a supporting role. Maybe it's easy for me to know that. Like Edgar Wright would have never cast him in this film had he, you know, known. Unless you subscribe to the philosophy that everyone in Hollywood knew this was going on with these people.
I mean, everyone knew.
Everyone knew. Meryl Streep knew.
It was in Difficult People. They talked about it every episode.
So
yeah, he knew.
I mean, who knows if it's on my list or not? It may or may not.
More like Edgar Wrong. Top five. Just set it in a cooler city. Put it in Montreal.
I do agree with your point there.
Put it in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Atlanta.
Just something that has
tax incentives.
Iconic.
Can't be worth
nothing in downtown Atlanta or anywhere in Atlanta is iconic.
Just that diner.
No landmarks. All right. So that was your number 8, right?
Yeah.
Okay. My number 8. I will also be quick about, because I also talked about it in the very last pod, and that is The Florida Project, Sean Baker's film that I didn't discover till recently. It's one of the ones that shook up my top 10 list. I thought everything was solidified, and then I watched this film, and I see these performances, and I'm mesmerized by this film that has this kind of take on poverty, but kind of the day-to-day life through the eyes of the children that are living at this hotel. What it's like to be living in poverty right in the shadow of the happiest place on earth, quote unquote, in Orlando, right near Disney World, creates such an interesting setting for this film that I couldn't take my eyes off of. The Florida Project, beautifully shot, incredibly acted. Willem Dafoe is outstanding. The main characters, Mooney and her mom, Haley, are just dynamite in this film. Again, for extended thoughts, please listen to our last episode, but The Florida Project's my number 8. So, I'll be curious to see if that's
good choice.
Anyone
a little
else.
Low for me. It's a good choice.
Oh, a little low.
Yeah.
You're tipping your hand a little bit about.
I don't mind.
The movies on your list.
By the way, we're 9 movies into our lists.
Yeah.
We're 9 movies total. Not one overlap so far.
No.
That speaks to how good 2017 is, my friend.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be some overlaps. You know,
and
all 3 of us
right
are going to have Star Wars on the list, of course.
But do you think we'll have Wonder 20 Woman unique too. Out of 30?
What's that?
Is that possible? Do you think we're going to have more or less than 20 unique movies out of our 30 total
Probably
movies?
Not.
Probably not. We'll see. We'll find out.
We'll see.
All right. Well, I know this one's getting repeated, but for my number 7, it's The Disaster Artist.
Oh.
Yeah, this is another movie that gave me hope. I mean, we talked about hope earlier, right?
Yeah.
With the work movie. Mm-hmm. But The Disaster Artist was... we had an episode devoted to it 2 episodes ago, but I'll just reiterate that Disaster Artist was the story of perseverance in Hollywood in the face of constant rejection and everyone telling you that you cannot do something. Tommy Wiseau said, no, I can do it, and I will do it, and this is the story of it.
And he did it.
He just got on stage at the Golden Globes with James Franco, who won Best Actor.
He got on stage? I didn't see it.
Yeah, there's video.
Oh,
he went on stage. So think about that. Like, this is a guy who had no business doing what he did, and he was laughed out of the business. He was laughed at every stage of his decision-making career in Hollywood, and now he's on stage at the Golden Globes. What a life. I mean, and the Disaster Artist movie celebrates that life, celebrates Tommy, celebrates his crazy decisions, and James Franco is amazing in this, does a great job acting and directing it. And I just love the movie. So number 7 is The Disaster Artist for me.
Good pick. All right, Skyler.
Number 7 is a movie that I'm sure will be repeated on other lists.
We'll see, but it has yet to happen.
Lego Movie's got to be coming. Lego Batman's got to be coming.
It's coming.
But it's a movie that's in a genre that I don't normally love. The kind of thriller horror genre. And it's a departure from that genre because you have a comedy director, writer, who's first time directing. It's Get Out.
Oh.
Hey.
And so Get Out is the first movie I saw this year, and it's stuck with me the whole year. And it was really, really, really well made. It's funny. It manages to do a lot of things while bringing in, like, it's amazing that they made this movie and wrote this movie before Trump's America.
Oh, yeah.
Yet it couldn't be any more 2017 than it was. And it was so in the day, in the time, and it was perfect for when it came out, and it was awesome. Love Get Out. It's one of my favorite
Incredible.
Horror thrillers ever.
I have a question. Do you think if Get Out came out in, like, say, 2013, it would be as beloved as it is now?
Hmm. No.
I agree.
So you think it's well-received, like the critical acclaim and how well it's been received is due to the political climate?
But that's not the movie's fault.
Right, it's not.
In fact, I think it's credit to the movie that it was able to read where America was going so well.
But do you think it had anything to do with it, that he was reading where America was going? Like, I just think that this was just a story that Jordan...
No, I think Jordan Peele has had a sense of... Because, I mean, I think, honestly, if you ask black Americans, even during the Obama years, they didn't feel like things were going great.
Well, that would be my argument. My argument is I actually think there's a timelessness to it. That, like, I feel like it maybe wouldn't be as popular in 2013. But I think it's pretty applicable however far you want. I mean,
right. I just think that a white audience understands this movie in 2017 a lot better than a white audience.
Yeah,
I think a lot of white people in 2013 were like, "Hey, we fixed racism."
Yeah.
I think it takes a black voice to come along and be like, "No, this is where we're at." So.
Yeah. Here you go. Electing a black president doesn't mean America's free from racial prejudice now. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Get Out. I think it was hurt by the fact it came out so early in the year. I mean, it won't be hurt ultimately at the Academy Awards because I imagine it'll get nominated. But is there a chance it doesn't get nominated for Best Picture? I mean, it's got it, right?
Oh, it will get one of the noms. And I will be really disappointed if he doesn't get a Best Director nom.
He won't get a Best Director nom.
Why not?
Because there's only five, and I don't think they're going to pick him.
Not prestigious enough of a movie.
Dude, I don't think they don't love comedy directors. To...
It was like, that's the thing. It's one of the funniest movies of the year by far. Oscar's still so white.
The Academy absolutely believes that by giving Moonlight the Oscar, they're all good now. You know they believe that, right? That they don't have to be super conscious of that. Of diversity anymore.
They better still be careful because
this is the Academy we're talking about.
Guillermo del Toro, they're in trouble.
Paul Thomas
Anderson can tan.
What's that?
I said Paul Thomas Anderson can kind of tan a little bit. I'm sure he'll get a nomination.
He will because he's Paul Thomas Anderson. Spielberg will also get one for The Post because he's Spielberg. So those are locks, right? Like, they're just going to...
But that's the problem with the Oscars we have right now is we have so many locks.
If I know.
Tom Hanks makes a movie, he's a lock.
It's a lock, right.
Like, we have so many of the acting positions now.
Gary Oldman's a lock for Best Actor.
Who else?
Lock. Gary Oldman.
Oh, yeah.
For 1,000%. The Churchill
film? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You're exactly right.
I'm tired of this. The Oscars are so... Like, that's... Last year, white. I just got kind of jaded when... Like, Swiss Army Man couldn't get a nomination for music. Yeah, like,
it's hard to expect that, you know.
Best use of a cadaver in a movie, Swiss Army Man. A farting cadaver in a movie.
I don't know.
You just need to stop crapping on Swiss Army Man.
It's a good movie. David's missing out by not seeing it.
I'm not crapping on it. I've just never seen it. I watched the first 10 minutes, actually. And
no, you didn't.
I did. The farting jet ski. We've talked about this. I was like...
Oh, okay.
I was like,
it's in the trailer.
I think I'm done. Is it in the trailer? I never saw a trailer.
Yes,
I
watched the first 10 minutes. That is the trailer.
Honestly, I think I watched the first 20. It was quite a bit. Okay. All right. That was your number. Who is that?
Seven?
Yep. All right. And that was Skylar?
Yeah. Correct. What was your seven?
Mine?
It Comes at Night. No, sorry. Disaster Artist.
That was eight.
Disaster Artist.
Yeah. So it was Disaster Artist for Aaron. You had Get Out. And my number seven is Baby Driver. So our first overlap.
Hey, overlap.
Ooh.
Baby Driver... similar to Get Out, it came out too early in the year, and I think it's actually recency bias has hurt me. This film was lower on my 10. In fact, my initial list, it was off of it altogether. The way it got back on my list is I was preparing for my 14-hour flight from LA to Tokyo. Well, from LA to Xiamen, China. I didn't know this, but I had prepared my phone by downloading all of this Netflix content. You know, it's great that they now allow you to have like offline content. And so I had this whole schedule of how I was going to spend my 14 hours on this flight, the longest flight in my life. And I had all these shows and I was going to play these different games on my phone. I had Audible books downloaded on my phone, podcasts. I had this whole content lineup. And little did I know that the Chinese aviation agency, government agency or whatever, their FAA, absolutely forbids any cell phone to be turned on at all on a flight. Not even airplane mode. It has to be turned off. The thing is this is China we're talking about, and they actually enforce this in a very real way, to the point that there were the crew, like flight crew and flight attendants, were like getting upset at passengers that were like mostly
Americans.
They were thinking like, oh, I can just turn this on to airplane mode and not, you know. And they were actually like yelling at people that they would catch. And there was one dude that's his job was walking up and down the aisles making sure people didn't have their phones on. So
now you told us that he had a ruler, right? And he would kind of hit your fingers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there was absolutely.
He didn't have a ruler. He had a hammer and a sickle. So you choose which one you want.
It's like they're aware that this was some antiquated idea that, like, you know, having your phone on disrupts, you know, like the frequencies for the pilot or whatever. Mm-hmm. But not only did they, like, it's one thing to just have the law still in place, but they really enforced it. You could have a laptop open, you could have an iPad, but you couldn't have your cell phone turned on, even if it's an airplane mode. So my point is I was relegated to their content on the screen in front of me, which was entirely Chinese films and Baby Driver. The Chinese nice. Edit of Baby Driver, by the way. Which unfortunately doesn't cut Kevin Spacey out.
No, Kevin Spacey. Oh, no.
I wish.
He celebrated.
Wouldn't that be great if they cut in their own Chinese actor, like someone famous in China? No, but it was actually edited for content like China does to every film that comes through. There are no R-rated films that come in.
As they should, yes.
They just chop the heck out of it. Yeah, no, Utah would be proud. But my point is I had 14 hours and I watched Baby Driver over and over and over. And it actually did remind me, like, oh, this film was a thrill ride. It was a rush. And recency bias of other films had caused me to kind of knock it from my list. But it absolutely is one of my favorite films of the year. And I have it at number 7. So, all right.
Good call.
Number 6.
Oh, number 6 for me is the small little film. Okay, so that's actually my theme for the year, is the small little independent films.
Oh, yeah.
Were mostly my favorite. The latest one for me, number 6, is the movie Good Time.
Ooh.
Which we talked about a lot on the last episode. And I just think this movie was made for me. It's dark, it's gritty, it's gross to look at, it's hard to watch, but it's great. I love it so very much. Recently did a rewatch after talking to you guys about it, and I loved it so much more that I couldn't stop thinking about it. I think about it basically every day. I get a little obsessed with movies that I like. And I'll just think about a random scene. Like, it'll just pop in my head.
Yeah.
And I'll remember how much I enjoyed it. So Good Time is one of those movies that's just been ingrained in my head, and I can't get rid of it. And I'm happy that I can't get rid of it, because I love the heck out of it. So, yeah, anyone that doesn't know, Good Time is a small little movie about two brothers who are on the run from the cops. And one of the brothers is Robert Pattinson. And it's basically it's following him for 24 hours while he tries to get his brother out of lockup. So, in a nutshell, that's what it is. It's very dark. It's very New York. It's shot on film, and it's super gritty, hard to watch. I love it. Good Time.
How upset are you that Skylar refuses to finish watching it?
I mean, that's just... Well, that's on brand for him. If I like something, he's not going to watch it. That's cool. I'm fine with it.
You didn't finish watching it, did you, Skylar?
I've had time.
How far in did you get there? I'm curious.
40 minutes.
Opening credits.
40 minutes. He's trying to get he just got his brother out of the hospital. It's crazy.
Oh, okay.
That's a good sequence.
Yeah,
dude. Finish the movie. You're probably not going to love it like I did, but I absolutely love it. I think it's essential viewing for 2017.
Dude, I'll say this. I watched an interview with the directors because I needed to see what the brother looked like in real life and hear him talking in English.
As the character.
And it's incredible. They made a comment that I'll say from 40 minutes of seeing this movie, totally holds true. They wanted to make a movie that made you feel things like you feel in an action movie when you're seeing a huge action sequence or like one of these things that costs so much money to make. They wanted you to make you feel that without having to spend $100 million. Mm. And they nailed that because it's a movie that makes you feel so many emotions and it's so intense. And they didn't spend more than $1 million on actual production. Like, it's just incredible.
Isn't that a novel idea? They don't need explosions. It's just like artful cinematography, cutting the film the right way, and just a series of sequences paced correctly together can have that.
With thrill. Great performances.
With great performances.
Like, that's the key, I think.
Yeah.
If you don't have Robert Pattinson with one of the best performances of the year, as far as I'm concerned, the movie doesn't work. He's so damn good in this that I believe he deserves the Oscar. For
Twilight's Robert Pattinson deserves the Oscar. That's what you said.
I think so.
Wow.
I think so.
Poor guy. Wow. He's got such a hill to climb up.
Well, Good Time is a really good first step up that hill, I will say. A couple steps, even. All right, Skylar, what's your six?
Oh, man. I can't believe we're already six.
I feel like you're writing these as you go, by the way. Are you doing that? Are you coming up?
No, I got my list. I can screenshot it for you.
Oh, it like takes you a minute every time you're like, let me think of a movie I saw.
I had a different window open.
He's on Box Office Mojo right now and Rotten Tomatoes.
What made money?
I'm currently writing reviews to bring down The Last Jedi's Rotten Tomatoes score. That's a 24-hour thing, though. My number six was a movie that I know both of you hated. But was just such a great movie. It's a movie about someone with a split personality disorder, maybe.
No.
And maybe a character that is a villain in another movie. Mm-hmm. That's coming soon. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't put split my title.
Oh my gosh. I believed you did. My number six honestly, is, you had me.
It's really B-more. It's number one. It's Coco.
Oh, good.
Wow. Good. Coco.
Can we make Aaron see this film? He just won't do it.
Aaron, I don't want to white-splain your culture to you.
That's the
Please
problem.
Please do. Yeah.
But you're going to love it.
That's the thing. You might hate it. That's my problem. I can't actually tell Aaron how much I love this movie without feeling like I'm a white dude telling him how he should see this movie about Mexican culture. I just can't do it. I feel weird about that.
Well, I mean, if I do watch Coco, we're going to have to do a podcast on it, and it's just going to be you two guys muted while I talk about it for an hour.
Yes.
So,
agreed.
That's fair.
But you guys have to be there. Like, that's the thing.
Agreed.
I'm up for that.
All right.
I didn't know you liked Coco this much, Skylar.
Yeah, it's aged well.
Oh, it's so good.
I've forgotten about that abortion of a mini movie that comes before it that's 22 minutes long. Yes, I'm willing to say the real length now. But Josh Gad nearly ruined Coco for me. Because some idiots at NASA Disney made some terrible decisions. And thankfully, I've been able to put that aside and feel what Coco made me feel. And it's fantastic. It's one of those movies that it's the best time you'll watch it is the first time you watch it. But I'm still excited to see it again and just enjoy it again. It's solidly in the good Pixar category.
Oh, yeah. When I texted you about Coco at first, you know, I was so excited about what I just saw because it was just bursting with this creativity that's, you know, vintage Pixar. And your response to your thoughts on Coco were literally, I can't stop thinking about how much I hated that Olaf short at the beginning. And dude, you couldn't get past it. You couldn't even, so you had no good things to say about Coco, not because it wasn't a good movie or you didn't think so, it was just because of Olaf.
Yep, Olaf nearly ruined it for me, but I got past that.
I mean, Rhett,
a better man for it.
Rhett Hildebrandt, he almost walked out of Coco because of it. He almost didn't even stick around for the whole thing.
That, by the way, would have been the right decision.
Are we too hard on Olaf, though? Because all he wanted was to create memories, like Christmas memory and traditions for Anna and Elsa. And is that so bad in 22 minutes?
It's bad.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's really, really bad.
Yeah.
I want Olaf to be melted and turned into something else.
Thankfully, Josh Gad redeemed himself by starring in the wonderful Murder on the Orient Express. And what else was he in?
Nearly got himself a Domel.
Almost got himself a Domel. There was one other film.
He did all those short little, like, Twitter videos.
Those videos with Daisy Ridley asking her about Star Wars.
Yeah, those are good, right? Those didn't get old.
Easily his best performance at those series of videos. Yeah. Those Vines or whatever they are. Periscope.
So funny.
All right. We're number six, right? All right.
Yeah.
My number six starts to get into one of the themes that I found in some of the films on my list, mostly throughout the top five here, a theme about creative expression and creativity and what that means and ways people have and can go about expressing that. And so my number six film is Brigsby Bear. This is the film starring Kyle Mooney and co-written by Kyle Mooney. I think it's Dave McCary, I believe, who also directed it. Childhood friends behind the Good Neighbor YouTube channel, now of SNL fame. We reviewed this on the pod. Definitely revisit that for a more in-depth review. I love this film for so many reasons. But I love it because, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it takes what subject matter that could be dark and it decides not to tell that version of the story, and it explores something else. And it's a very sweet film. It's not like this deeply intellectual film, but it doesn't need to be. It's a film about what it means to have creative freedom and what it means to have creative expression and how that can be therapeutic and helpful and allow someone to move on and move forward in life. It's both funny and heartwarming, and the end scene nearly had me in tears. I really, really loved it. So Brigsby Bear, also with a good Mark Hamill performance. So that's my number
that's
six.
That's the best. That's actually the best. Yeah, Mark Hamill.
No, it is. It's the best version of Mark Hamill we've had in a long time, until we had at the end of the year Mark Hamill's Oscar worthy. I swear he should be nominated. The Last Jedi. You guys got to check this film out again. It is something else. He is so good in this film.
Yeah, my favorite part is when he mugs for the camera after drinking that.
It's a good smirk, though. It's a good look. I think that's good acting. It really is. Okay. All right. We're not gonna relitigate this. Not here. Not now.
But now's not the time. Damn it.
Brigsby Bear. You both saw Brigsby Bear, right?
Loved Brigsby Bear. Loved it.
Skyler,
not in my top 10 though.
Definitely saw it.
Okay, I'm not convinced that you did.
He didn't see it.
The way he looked, the way he responded to that question was very not so convincing. All right, we're into our top five.
But first
we have. Should we break this up into two episodes? We're at an hour.
Yeah, we have to do our donals.
What's that?
What are we at?
Oh yeah, the donal.
Dude, we're at an hour almost.
We're at an hour. 5 minutes. So for the audio pod, we need to break it up. I don't know about the Facebook Live video portion, though. Should we tell people if you want to hear what our top five are, you got to go listen to the audio pod? That'd be a little bit cruel. Let's talk Donal.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to do that and then just do a quick little wrap up and then start the beginning of episode two?
Yeah.
Great. So we have nominees for the Donal. I tweeted out a poll. We had a bunch of responses, actually, more responses than any other poll we've done. We've done very few polls. But I explained the criteria for a Donal Award, which is dominating a given year in supporting roles. And dominating meaning both volume and also quality of the work. Those are the two things. Like being in you have to have at least two films in a given year, but three or four even better. But as long as they're not all clunkers, right? Again, Donald Gleason did this in 2015 with those four films I referenced at the beginning of the pod. And so our nominees this year are Laura Dern for Star Wars The Last Jedi, Downsizing, Wilson. You might count The Founder. It was released wide in 2017, but technically came out first in limited in 2016. But she does play Michael Keaton's wife in that film. And so we have Laura Dern, who, of course, we all love on this pod. Also Baron Davis loves. And then we have also Rooney Mara for A Ghost Story, Una, and the Terrence Malick film Song to Song. Aaron is the biggest Rooney Mara fan that I know. and then we have Caleb.
Hey, wait, is that a fat joke?
No.
That sucks.
Oh,
he's No.
I love you, Rooney.
And then we have Caleb Landry Jones, who was in Get Out, American Made, both those films we've talked about already. He was in also Three Billboards, which we've talked about. And the fourth film was The Florida Project, which we've talked about. So all four of them have been referenced already on our lists. Those are four incredibly well-reviewed films. We also have John Boyega, who starred in the underappreciated film The Circle, which was known for being Bill Paxton's swan song.
Rest in peace.
Are you sure that wasn't Bill Pullman?
What?
Are we sure that wasn't Bill Pullman?
No.
Let's check the tape on that.
We don't know.
I don't know.
Okay, thank you. We just want to review that first.
And then he was in The Circle. He was in Star Wars The Last Jedi, which is a masterpiece. And he was in Detroit, which is a film that I need to see. It's Catherine Bigelow directed. Aaron's been singing its praises.
David told us all this.
Before the podcast we started recording, David said that he refused to see any movie directed by women. Okay. So he couldn't see Detroit this year, which is too bad.
Yeah, Lady Bird 2. I really would love to have seen that one.
And Wonder Woman.
Oh, Wonder Woman. I heard it was great.
Yeah.
None of that's true. I only see movies directed by women and some directed by men.
White women.
Okay, so those are our donal choices. Okay. We talked about it beforehand, who we should select. It's been tough.
The closest race in years.
This is the closest donal. It's been really, really hard for us to decide. And so it's between John Boyega and what's his name? Caleb Landry Jones.
Yeah.
Skylar, who do you think?
I'm going to have to go for John Boyega.
Okay.
First off, Caleb Landry Jones, he has a through line with all the characters he plays, mm-hmm. in that they're all white racists who definitely voted for Trump. And so
that's amazing, considering you didn't see The Florida Project, Three Billboards. You only saw him in American Made and Get Out, which admittedly are the two where he plays an absolute terrible person, a very unlikable character.
In Three Billboards, he was wearing one of those shirts that said "Gays for Trump."
Oh, God.
So we know that. I think Skyler's right.
He's a much more sympathetic character in Three Billboards.
Oh yeah.
I'm excited to see that one, but I think John Boyega really, you know, he's up there sharing the screen with the namesake of the award in The Last Jedi. He's up there with the original Donal, something that Carl Landry Jones can't say.
Mm-hmm.
He also just, I don't know, I feel like he's really blowing up. He's showing that he's not just an actor from Star Wars. He's showing he can do these other roles. He's doing Detroit. He's such a great little, like, he's not the main guy. He's supporting. And then he's in one of the most interesting roles in one of the most interesting movies of the year with his little role in, I can't explain it, in The Circle. But, this is John Boyega's year.
I mean, if we're going to be honest, this is probably the last year that John Boyega is ever going to be considered for this award. He's basically aging out of this award.
Because he's going to be in leading performances like Pacific Rim and...
And they're all going to be bad, so...
Ooh, that Pacific Rim is going to be so bad.
Oh, it's going to be
the trailer's bad.
A special kind of bad. So, you're making the case for John Boyega. I'm making the case for Caleb Landry Jones. His selection's four excellent, well-reviewed films. Yes, he plays some unlikable characters, but that's why he's so good. He plays that so well. He, to me, embodies the actual Donal Award. He did what Donal did in 2015. And it's so rare to have an actor do that with four films in a supporting role and do well in all of them. And granted, in Florida Project, he just has a couple minutes on screen. The downside being this would be the third white male that we've given the Donal to in a row, and that is problematic. You're nominating John Boyega. I'm nominating Caleb Landry Jones, and we're going to allow Aaron to pick the winner.
The only non-white person allowed on this podcast.
That's true.
I get the final say. And let me just mention quickly on the online Twitter poll, who won that? The People's Choice. Who was the People's Choice for the
People's Choice? War? This surprised me. It really did. And it was a close. I was looking. We had 30, nearly close. 40 votes cast. Really, really close. And Rooney Mara edged out the rest with 30% of the vote.
Be still my heart. Rooney.
The Queen Rooney.
Yes, Queen. Yes, Queen. But if yes, I get the queen. Final say, yes, if I get the final say, my money is going to go on Caleb Landry Jones.
Whoa.
I respect what John Boyega did this year.
All right, this is on your
but
head.
Star Wars, for me, is a terrible movie, so I cannot give him credit for that one.
Oh, that's... I shouldn't have let you pick this.
Cross it off the list.
I immediately regret this.
So Caleb Landry
change
Jones...
Change your vote. David, change your vote.
That's it.
Caleb Landry Jones.
The last ballot has been cast. Caleb Landry Jones is the winner of the 2017 Donut Award.
I'm podcasting for the rest of this episode in protest.
Okay. Well, that's why there's three of us. It's easy to do a 2-1, you know, majority. Wow. How are we going to tell Caleb? How can we let him know or his publicist know? We have a very expensive bust of Donald Gleason's head that we need to send to him.
Not my Donald.
Okay. All right. Hashtag not my Donald. Okay. All right. Okay. So congratulations to Caleb Landry Jones and to the other very, very well-qualified nominees. Maybe next year.
Thank you to all the voters.
Thank you to the voters. Yep. Yeah. And thanks to Donald Gleason and, more importantly, Brendan Gleason for creating Donald.
Oh, what about his brother?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Someone did come in with a tweet that was incredible about why we weren't considering Donald Gleason's brother, Brian Gleason, for the Donald this year, because he was in three films in supporting roles. It was Phantom Thread, which is Paul Thomas Anderson. And then he was in, what were the other ones? I already forgot.
It was Logan Lucky.
Logan Lucky, and, which I liked.
Yeah.
And then the third one was...
I don't even know. It was,
I think it was not a Mother. Good movie.
No.
Mother.
Oh, yeah, Mother. That's right. It was a great movie.
So three... Those You're were right. Three, it wasn't a good those movie. Those were three like, movies people are talking about for various reasons. But Phantom Thread, Logan Lucky, and Mother. Imagine if we gave the Donald Award to Brian Gleason.
Keep it in the family. That's a good call.
I thought that was so funny because honestly, Gleason's never going to do that again. So
no, probably not.
Sorry, Brian. Sorry. All right. So that's our first part. That's part one. We're going to break this up into two pods. All right. Well, thanks for listening. We won't do the send off like we usually do just because we're going to keep going right now. But take a listen to the part two for our 5-1 movies on our list of the top 10 films of 2017.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.